Hello and welcome to Civic Bants, a podcast brought to you by Budget, a platform where we discuss issues around governance, civic engagement, citizens engagement, grassroots engagement, budget analysis, and a host of others. My name is Nancy Odimegu. It's a pleasure to have you join us. Right, before I introduce my guests, there are two gentlemen here, so I look forward to introducing them. I mean, the last time one graced our studio was about 2 years ago. So nearly 2 years ago. So it's like, it's one of those conversations you look forward to. Right, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be exploring a series themed What's Next. You know, what's next now that the elections are over? There are some issues that are yet to be settled, the court cases, the tribunal and all. But we're going to be looking at what's next for Nigeria, touching the economy, health, governance, transparency, accountability, and a host of others. But for today's episode, which is the pilot episode of the What's Next series, we're focusing on the economy. And one thing I look forward to into this conversation, and I want our listeners to actually look out for, is the fact that we'll be honing in on some key issues that the incoming administration and, the government in general should pay attention to, things that they should prioritize and not hold lightly. Right, so allow me to introduce my guest to you. And the first person I'm going to introduce is a global civic leader, and I mean a global civic leader. He's one that is always innovating technologies into the civic space. But if I'm to say in a breath, I would say he's a global activist and civic leader and, a techie person. Please, ladies and gentlemen, I have Olusegun Onibinde, the global director of Budget, here with me. Hello, Olusegun.
It's a pleasure here, Nancy. I'm glad to be here. When you say tech now, I see how many lines of code can I write? But I'm happy to be here. I'm excited here.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. And I'm ready to fence the conversation with Olusegun. He's also one of Budget's brilliant mind. For me, he's the best research analyst I know today. And he happens to be the head of Budget Research and Policy Advisory Unit in Neil Bongosen.
Hello. Yeah, thanks, Nancy. Thanks for having me. And I feel really privileged to share the stage with someone who has blazed the trail in terms of the civic space. So
don't do this. You will rename this.
We'll name it the show podcast.
That's what you were going to plan to do.
But we're not far away from the truth. We're hitting it spot on.
Okay, no problem. Yeah.
All right, so gentlemen, like I said earlier, it's a pleasure. So what's next is going to cover what's next for Nigeria, and I look forward to having an insightful conversation, and I know listeners out there look forward to what the 2 cents you guys are going to drop on the table today. So Seun, let me go with you first. Nigeria economy right now, it is what it is. Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
So if we were to give just a general assessment, don't go too deep, but surface level assessment, what would you say? How would you say it has fared so far?
It's like what they call inside life. What is the deeper life? it's like Nigerian economy is not, it's not in the best place. And if you look at the best way you are going to judge an economy is to look at quality of living, the standard of life. People would throw every metric, GDP, GDP per capita, they would throw different economies, account balances, current account surplus, and all of that. But you are going to look at the quality of life that you have. I was reading something from Zainab Usman, who is the head of Kadige Endowment Program for Africa. And she mentioned that Nigeria had 3 cycles of boom. And she said 1958 to 1966, 1972 to 1978, and 2000 to 2008. So apart from that, whatever time you put it in Nigeria's cycle, we've really not made progress. It's been quality of life has been decreasing. And it comes to about when you look at things around inflation. That's a starting point, any point in time for me. 22%, 20%. I mean, food inflation could even be sometimes higher than that. It's a big, big problem. That whatever money or whatever salary or whatever income you make in Naira value degrades over time. Like someone said yesterday that inflation is the academy of delayed gratification. So when you store all that money, pensions, savings, and all that, and inflation just wipes away that value, yeah. Then what exactly is the whole point? You also look at the currency itself, you know, significant devaluation. It stopped being, I feel like it stopped being a store value for a lot of people. People were buying, doing dollars, but you know, the way dollars now become mainstream in conversation from everybody, and I guess me like, 2011, 2012, 2013, nobody cared about dollar valuation. Everybody held their naira. So, how your currency now gets that fluctuation, and suddenly you see assets, by the time you adjust them for dollar values, it's significantly lost value.
Yeah.
It's a huge problem. Then you look at poverty figures, and you see how bad things have gone. So for me, I feel unemployment. So those are the ratios I would look at. When you say you want to look at the economy. Quality of life has not improved. In the last 8 years, man. We can talk about infrastructure. Yeah, people built roads, people built schools, people did all that, but quality of life of an average Nigerian, that's not improved.
All right, thank you. So to show the economy right now is not in the best place possible. Talk about currency devaluation, inflation, poverty, and things that the quality of life is really not something you hold on to. Right. So Ini, I would want to hear your own two cents on this. In your opinion, where do you think Nigeria economy stands now?
I agree with him completely. If you look at some of the specific challenges, fine, they will tell you that there's been some growth, coming from COVID. During the COVID year, there was 1.8% decline. But 2022, following that year, it was about 3.6% growth. But that does not discount the fact that it's still a fragile economy. We are just one major pandemic, global, fiscal crisis away from another recession. And that's because we've not been able to create buffers, create system that would, buffer the system when these shocks do occur. He mentioned other issues around the incidence of poverty, of unemployment, which has reflected the current state of security all across the globe. When this government was coming into office, the major security challenge, was with the insurgency with Boko Haram.
Yeah.
But now we have it multifaceted in virtually, different aspects or different segments of the country, or sectors of the country. And so that sort of tells you, how very fragile the economy is. If you look at very specific figures, we've made some progress with the non-oil sector. We saw growth year on year from 92% to 94%. But with the oil sector, which has relatively been the mainstay for a long period of time, there's been constant decline. Owing to oil theft, decline investments in that particular sector. But quite interestingly, if you look at the numbers as it regards the contribution of non-oil exports to non-oil GDP, it's only about 1.3%. So what that tells you is that you have a very weak manufacturing base, and that has reflected in the foreign exchange shortage, as we would see. The economy has not been able to create enough jobs for the number of work entrants that we see every year, looking at the burgeoning population. And that has also reflected in the large import bill that has not been supported with our export earnings, as the case may be. Declining foreign reserves, as we've seen, has had impact on the exchange rate. And so the cost of doing business, has significantly increased, for businesses, for citizens, leading to a low quality of life like he had adhered to earlier. And so not too good as the case may be. We're hoping that the incoming administration would have the courage, to do what is needful to be able to, begin to lift this country out of the doldrums.
All right, so the key word in that last statement is courage, for, because everybody happens to kind of like shy away from doing what needs to be done. So you mentioned fragile economy because we've not been able to set up a system, a structure, so I'm going to take you up on that. So this system you're talking about, if we're to look at key issues now that should be addressed, key issues that should be prioritized, what would you say are like on your top 3 to top 5 list?
The first thing on anybody who is going to take the reins in Nigeria at the moment is the issue of subsidy. Subsidy, because we have a shrinking fiscal space. There's a funding squeeze, right? And so you're not raising enough revenues to be able to fund your expenditure. And you know, official development assistance has sort of also shown, because other countries are dealing with their own sort of challenges. And so the persons who, or the agencies who often look to for support, are dealing with their own issues. So internally, there's that shrinking fiscal space. And we have a very, very expensive subsidy regime whereby, you know, we're spending more on subsidy than we're able to even raise. That's on one end. If you look at the numbers for subsidy in the medium-term expenditure framework, we had said with business as usual. What I mean by business as usual is that if we do not take off subsidy, we are going to pay subsidy for the entire duration of the year, that's January to December, it will cost us about 6.5 trillion. Now, to actually look at the value of that, what Nigeria raised as revenue, federal government, between January and November last year was 6.5 trillion. So what that tells you is that if we are going to fund subsidy from January to December at the current oil prices, we'll be spending
almost the entire revenue
for January to for December on subsidy. If you even look at the revenues that, you know, the entire 36 states of the Federation cumulatively were able to raise for 2021, that was about 5.2 trillion, less than what we project to spend in 2023. And so we have found ourselves in, you know, a very, very precarious situation where we are not raising enough revenues to even fund the budget. Then you have this expensive subsidy regime, which, by the way, you know, if you look at it critically, is not necessarily benefiting the poor. Statistics available, you know, shows that only 20% of households benefit from subsidy. The bulk, you know, is what companies, MDAs, you know, huge corporations benefit from. And further statistics would show that 40% of Nigeria's poor benefit from only 3% of the value of subsidy. As you would know, with information that has been, you know, in public domain, that a bulk of what is even imported is sold across the border because of the huge room for arbitrage. What we're selling here is different from what is selling across the border. So there's an incentive for persons to move the products across the border to make more money. And so any incoming administration should, you know, face subsidy headlong. Definitely everybody has agreed across the board that subsidy needs to be. But what now needs to be addressed is how would it go, and how would you sort of reduce the impact on the most vulnerable members of society when it eventually goes. So I think for me, at the top of you know, the agenda for anybody who will take the reins of office would be to, you know, address decisively this issue of subsidy.
All right, so that's one. So we're just going to circle back on the others. Let's hear from Olusegun.
No, I like Inyobong's point on subsidy, and I know it's a burning issue. You know, everybody wants to do it, but you figure out that nobody has the courage and the cost to do it. Because, you know, it's something like you're a bit afraid of the social disorder that could happen if you do that, because it's going to have a what I call like an emotional inflationary effect. I don't know if I'm taking the right word. It's not because fuel pricing should have a significant impact on price inflation, but you will see that happen, you know, on consumer goods, because everybody will be like, oh, the transport to this place has increased, and because of that, my pepper now goes from 100 naira to 150 naira. Yeah. Then the bricklayers also says, I no longer collect a 500 naira wage per day, it is now 1,000 naira. So it just has that kind of, you know, huge ramification. I think everybody gets worried about that, but there are wider concerns on that. But my bigger worry is, in terms of my own first point, and maybe we'll just be sparring one, is to think through how do we imagine Nigeria in the long term. Because I figured out that we are in this motion, you know, of just 4 year cycle and 4 year cycle, and looks like anything is not changing. And if there's anything that would fix Nigeria, it will not happen in 4 years.
Definitely.
I mean there's no miracle to it. It will not happen in that would really shift the entire country. I mean, look at countries like China. You know, they will say 1978 was when like they had this renaissance, and they were, you know, Deng and all of that change now started happening, and now cascaded to all what they did in up to the 80s and in the 90s, and all where they now became like the core manufacturing of the world, and where they at that point where they can go toe to toe with the US in terms of exports globally. And it's in that position of that they were not thinking in cycles in 4 year cycles. They were thinking long term. And I think that's something that I struggle with Nigeria. For example, you know, we have a lot of grouse with Buhari. I mean, I do. But look at things like, and I will not even imagine us, we are not doing it now. Let's imagine that we're doing it 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
Like, you have an entire industrial heartland in the north, in Kano. But there, and you are a gas country. But there is no even pipeline that takes gas into Kano, to an industrial part of core of your north. There is none. And so you're just building a new gas pipeline, the AKK line that goes there. You had the whole of Europe. We had a huge dependency on Russia. You know, we've been talking, hearing about West African gas pipeline for more than a decade now. You could not even take that by the boot. You say, just imagine we also been able to take 20% of gas income in Europe. If you wrap the pipe around Africa, before you know, it's in Morocco. Before Morocco, it's in Spain already. You are started supplying Europe. So for me, it's not just about what we were. And even if you talk about, you want to grow non-oil income, because we can continue in this. We did $4 billion last year. Then we did $5.5 billion this year. The next year we did $6 billion. Then we are moving in small steps. For us to really change the Nigerian paradigm, we need to figure out a way to do things that would exist in the long term. Things that a leader would plant and he would likely not enjoy it. He would understand that another 10 years, another 20 years, someone is going to come and benefit from this. And we've seen examples like Ogun State. You know, there's a pipeline, the gas pipeline that just runs right on Lagos by the expressway. There's a gas pipeline that runs around Agbara. There's one that runs around Ota. It created an explosion of industrial activity. So, I mean, it's just basic sense. Now, those who were the visionaries for those opportunities, and now look at Ogun State as the second highest IGR in the country for a non-oil state. If you take Lagos, maybe you adjust for maybe like Rivers and Delta, it has. So, it just speaks to something that the way we think about the country, it has to be long-term. And I'm going to end on this point. If JFK says today, when he said America is going to send somebody to the moon, he has said it, you know, and the entire bureaucracy and establishment, even if he died a year after or 2 years after, even though his party was no longer in party, maybe another 6 years after, they still sent a person to the moon, because the bureaucracy is structured in a way that it's not limited by democratic term limits. So Nigeria has to figure out a way to institutionalize some set of reforms in some long-term institutions. Maybe it's the National Planning Commission, or maybe it's I don't know what that would look like, but there are supposed to be some institutions that anyhowness, political interference is not there, that they're thinking that this is where this country will be by 2040, 2030, and they're laser-focused.
Thank you. So we have two coming in, subsidy, and then we have long-term vision for Nigeria's plan. But that one, there was a point you made where you said a leader is going to plant a vision right now, but he would not necessarily benefit from it.
Yep.
Now, whoever that leader is has to have like citizens' best interest at heart. If that is number one, because what we see these days is, let me come and chop. Where do I want to chop from? Where do I want to take my
scramble
own for the next 4 years, for the next 8 years? So whoever is really going to toe that path, citizens should come first. The vision of the country should come first. So I love the fact that we've dropped one on the table.
It's kind of like balance. So Ine, let's have you go with another point. point?
I mean,
issues?
Before I even move to my own point, his points are very valid. In terms of thinking long term, I think we are very good at documenting our thoughts for the long term. When it comes to operationalizing those thoughts, you know, that's where that distortion comes. It looks like the person who prepared the plan is not even different. It comes from a different planet from the person who is supposed to implement that plan. If you look at the National Development Plan, you look at the agenda, the recent long-term plan, the agenda 2050 that was released, beautiful plans on paper. But how does that reflect in how governments now allocate and distribute resources to be able to achieve some of those really strategic objectives that have been clearly articulated in those plans? Nothing to write home about. He raised a very important point about gas. I mean, for those that are religious, and I am religious, I believe that God has blessed us with everything that we need to survive, you know, and live, you know, quality lives, you know, on earth. But those potentials are buried beneath the ground, and we have refused to explore those potentials. He mentioned gas. Proven reserves of gas is about 185 trillion cubic feet, Nigeria. We have only been able to produce only 1% of that. Just 1%. And this is a country that says its plan for the world after oil is gas. And we have not mustered up enough, you know, resources thinking around, you know, making gas profitable. I mean, he alluded also to the Russian. There was a huge opportunity for, you know, for Africa to capture, Nigeria specifically, to capture some parts of the European market. But there was no way we were able to do that. We're still battling, you know, with power challenges. We have not been able to create industrial clusters, you know, by providing power to such clusters, you know, which reflects in the very weak manufacturing base that we've had. So there needs to be a deliberate effort at, like you said, institutionalizing these plans, so that regardless of who takes the reins, regardless of when the person does take the reins, you know, there's a deliberate attempt by these sets of rules, laws, you know, to ensure that the person sticks by these development aspirations of the country, you know, that have been institutionalized, as the case may be. Going to my point now, it would be I have a problem with how, you know, Nigeria raises resources, allocates and spends these resources, and how these resources are eventually accounted for.
Okay.
Right? We have one of the weakest revenue regimes in the world. For a country Nigeria size, over 200 million, I mean,
people,
as the case may be, if you look at the GDP per capita, less than $3,000. If you look at what government generates as revenue, it's shameful. Looking at the huge resources available to government in terms of natural resources, in terms of human capital, that we are, you know, performing those numbers as the case may be. You look at our revenue, we've not done more than 7 trillion with this population size ever. You have agencies of government that have been set up by law to generate revenues. They have been empowered by law, they have been funded by budgets to be able to, you know, set up in a way that they will generate revenues that government, you know, can use to fund budgets to stimulate growth and make the lives of people better. But those agencies have become the bane, you know, of the Nigerian society. Agencies that were set up to raise revenues have become liabilities to government. If you look at the oil sector, you pick the refineries. For years, more than almost 10 years, you find refineries that have been redundant, as the case may be, or dormant, as the case may be, right?
Yeah.
They incur huge operation costs without refining a single barrel of crude. And we have not found it wise to either sell off these things
or just leave the business entirely and allow, you know, the private sector come in and run these businesses. Yeah. If you look at the solid mineral sector, we have been blessed in commercial quantity across the length and breadth of this federation with solid minerals, whether they are energy minerals, whether they are mineral ores, whether they are precious stones, and so government has not been able to whether invest in that sector or create an enabling environment in that sector for private sector to come in. There are, if you look at the Core North, where you have some of those precious minerals, they have become conflict minerals, and ungovernable spaces have been created around those minerals, where activities of artisanal miners or illegal miners, as the case may be, are completely off the books of government. If you look at the contribution to GDP, it's less than 0.5% for solid minerals for a country that's rich in solid minerals. Contribution in terms of revenue to the revenue pool for the federal government for last year, less than 5 billion naira. Completely abysmal. So that's one area I've really had a problem with. I'll quickly move to expenditure because of time.
Yes.
I mean, the budget year in, year out. I mean, for the want of a better word, for us, we've always seen it almost like a crime scene. Crime scene because you see opportunities, clear opportunities for state capture for corruption, right? When you see instances where certain projects that should be conceptualized by MDAs created by government or who have been given the money to create this have not been allowed to do that. Powers have been usurped by the legislature. With the incidence of constituency projects, but that has now gone beyond the remit of constituency projects to now actually replicating these projects across the entire budget in the budgets of ministries and departments and agencies of government. And that needs to stop. Third is the issue around debt, right? Nigeria's credit rating was reduced, last year, the Moody ratings, and this has increased the cost of borrowing, not only for government, externally, not only for government, but the credit ratings for the banks were also reduced. And what has been government's direct response is to approach the CBN for overdraft, thereby breaching laws that it had established for itself to serve as, financial safeguards.
Yeah.
And it has increased the debt profile, has, increased sort of or reduced the debt sustainability potential of the country, as the case may be. I would like to leave this here for now, so that we can move on to other things.
Yeah. So you were big on financial management.
Yes.
Right?
Public financial management, revenue, expenditure,
and
debt.
Yes. All right. Over to you, Lucia.
For me, I would take a few things, but a big point is power. I went to South Africa recently. My time in South Africa. This was the first time I felt like I was in Nigeria. There was no light. There were actually light, and they were using fancy name. They said it's load shedding. I said the pass taking light. They say load shedding. I was. But they were still sending them, they were being honorable.
Exactly.
Timetable. Yeah, we are going to take the power 8 a.m. at 6 a.m. And they said 6 a.m. and it was 8 a.m. and there was still no power. I said, welcome. that Africa, you have to really bear it. And it was incredible because, and it's always just painful for me. I mean, Nigeria, we've been on this 5,500 megawatts thing for years. Jonathan even achieved those peaks. It was not stable, but at least then for how many years are we going to be on 5,000 megawatts? For how many years? In 5 years, we have countries like China adding like over 50,000 megawatts of renewable energy into their grid. We are stuck with 5,500 megawatts. We've done everything. We did the Power Sector Reform Act. We we said, okay, we're going to unbundle discos. Then we went to say we're going to unbundle Gencos. Then we said we were going to concession the transmission company.
Yeah.
Then we created MBETs to provide some guarantee for the offtake of power. We did fixed gas pricing for the offtakers for the gen. You know, we put all the initiatives on the table. Then after we've done all of that, going outside, that's okay. We went to sign one deal in Germany with Siemens to now say, okay, come and help us even now fix this. And we gave them huge targets. You had things like by 2023 we'll be in maybe 8,000 megawatts, 2025 we'll be in 15,000, 10,000. And the funny thing is, Nigeria's generation capacity in terms of grid generation is around almost 12 to 15,000 megawatts.
So we have the capacity.
Yeah, but all is that you don't have a transmission capacity, they don't have generation capacity, which I mean is that if they put on all, if all the big generators
come on,
your transformer in your area will blow. You know, your generation structure, your generating, the downstream generation is not even solid to take that size of generation. The downstream distribution can't take that generation. So for me, if there's anything that we have to really grind hard, at least let's get somewhere decisive, you know. And you know, Fashola said it was easy. Wari came there and had to lackluster power. I mean, Fashola, he was overwhelmed with everything. We didn't see anything. Then they brought another man who had no page on Google, you know. And yeah, then of this, I mean, it's just tiring. I want a solution on power, on central grid power. And I know there, and if it means we go do solar grid systems, and if that is the way, yeah, we do it. But there has to be power, you know. I figure out that it's not like, if you see bills abroad, if someone says, yeah, my bills are abroad, the power bill is not the most expensive bill. You know, you might talk about mortgage, you might talk about maybe school fees for children, and if he or she is doing private school, but it's not the power bill. Something that put a decent, reasonable power bill for Nigerians. Because the thing around all this diesel and all, it has wiped up industry. So for me, I would take on power. Second thing I would take on is state economies. The idea of you having, thinking that somehow Nigeria is going to be great if our states are not functional is big time pipe dream. Is that what you call, you play penalty?
throwing.
Yeah. You know, it's just, we are just missing targets. You know, we are just joking. It was going to take a considerable size of reasonable governors for you to be able to change Nigeria. If we have governors who are just sitting there to say, all I need to do is pay salary, pay pensions, tar 20 kilometers of road, and look for one or two primary school centers to paint
and
their roof.
And he
has spray singers everywhere, and he does that for 8 years. If that is all, then we are not going to move. A state governor now must think about, how do I expand my economy? And I think the federal government, my problem is that the federal government intervention for states is always coming at when there's crisis for salary payments.
Yeah.
That's the only time you hear. That's when you mostly. That's the only time you hear Paris Club 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Paris. You know, that's when you hear it. It's because, but a state that you hear things that are so stupid. Yeah, this state is a civil service state. What does it mean that a state is a civil service state? Which means that if there's no civil service salary, the entire economy of the state is down. You must figure out a way, and we had all of these things. I mean, even if you go through states, either you go through Ibadan, you know, the whole disengulf and all that, there was an industrial layout there. You know, all of these places had industrial layout and went comatose. We have to find a way to bring back state economies, and the federal government and the National Assembly, and whatever policy framework, legislative framework that will make all of that happen, has to start now. And that also now means we now see state governments in a different way, so that we're not just saying it's good you pay, you pay salary. If somebody works for you, you have to pay the person in the first place. But you must show us that how are you transforming the economy of that state so that it's attracting new labor, so that it's generating new taxes, so that it's actually bringing new opportunities for you to scale. You know, there's no reason why a state cannot, like, look at Plateau, for example, incredible weather, or Taraba. Why is Taraba not the tea factory of Nigeria? I mean, Kenya does almost $800 to $1 billion on $800 million to $1 billion on tea. Another maybe $1 billion on something like that on coffee. Close another amount of money on horticulture, just flour. You know, they're exporting to Europe and all. And these same people have the temperate framework for it. But everybody's waiting. You know, how big is this far? How big is the fact of this month?
Actually,
we can't make it that way.
All right, thank you so much. That's three: power, expanding state economy, thinking beyond just the regular ticking the box. Okay, pension, I've paid this, I've paid salary, I've paid this. So, in 5 minutes, I want you to give me two more.
Okay, so for me, and it draws from one of the points Sheung had raised earlier. There's a problem with how we manage consequences. It looks like we live in a society where there's no law and order, right?
Okay.
People feel like they can do whatever they like
and get away with it.
Previous governments tried to set up, you know, anti-corruption agencies. They tried to invest. I mean, if you look at the investments in the law enforcement agencies, you see that deliberate efforts have been made to strengthen these agencies to be able to enforce the law. But the evidence we have on ground, you know, shows that in terms of how we have allocated resources to law enforcement, there's not much value the country has gotten in terms of those investments. People commit economic and financial crimes of gargantuan proportions. And there is absolutely nothing, you know, that's done to them. Or if the long arms of the law eventually manage to catch up with them, they do their time for just maybe a few weeks,
yeah,
and they are out. So what does that tell you? That the consequence management system, especially as it regards the allocation of or the of public resources, as the case may be, is very, very weak. Something needs to be done about the administration of justice as it regards public finance. The Fiscal Responsibility Act tried in its way to create guidelines to be able to guide or to ensure fiscal discipline, as the case may be. But as you would know, with that law, it's likened to a dog that can bark, but that cannot bite. Because there are almost no sanctions for breaching, you know, specific sections of that act. You even come back to the issue of borrowing with the CBN Act. Clearly, the government has said, we breached this particular section by going over the threshold allowable by law,
yes,
to get overdraft from the CBN. What did he do after doing that? He approached the Senate to legalize this breach of the law that he had done. And the Senate, without holding anybody accountable, without amending the specific sections of the law that had been broken, went ahead to grant, you know, the request by the executive. So as it is, whoever is coming into power, you have set a precedent for the person to not respect the rule of law. So if we are going to make any progress, there needs to be, you know, very, very, very deliberate efforts at instituting the rule of law and holding people or persons accountable for the period or for the decisions they take, you know, as public servants or take on behalf of the entire federation. Lastly, investments in human capital development. If you look at it, and when I mean investment, it's not just investment by the state and by the federal government, because like Sheung had highlighted earlier, the focus is usually on the federal government. There's very little attention on what is done in the states. Over time, our investment in education, in health, has been abysmal. And so what do you find? You find out that the jobs that can necessarily lift people out of poverty, people are not getting the required skills to be able to either create those jobs or even, you know, get those jobs if they already exist. So our investment in education over time has not yielded results or has not significantly contributed to productivity at the end of the day. So states need to be deliberate. And I mean, there have been frameworks, benchmarks, you know, sort of agreements that have been made at the regional level, with education, you know, 15% heads of states have committed that, you know, 15% of their budgets go to education. Same with health. But what you see across board, I mean, we did the state of states for 2021. States like Ondo, education spending per capita was 300 and something naira. What do you intend to achieve on education in that state if you are spending, if your education spending per capita is about 360 naira? Same for health. And you can see how fragile, you know, the health system is with infrastructure. If you look at health at the primary, at the local level, which is the primary healthcare, in a lot of communities is almost nothing to write home about. So I would like to also see how incoming governments, not only at the federal level, but also at the state level, will prioritize investment in
human capital
development with a focus on health, education, and by extension also social protection and education.
By being intentional and deliberate with investment in human capital development.
You know, the funny thing is that as you begin to wind down, you find out that your points are aligned. and I think, I don't think my points are very different from what he said. He spoke about rule of law and consequent management. I might rework that and call it, my own side, accountable governance. We must have governance that is premised on service, that is founded on service. As long as governance in Nigeria is all about personal benefit, it's not about peddling influence, as long as it's about providing comfort for like a tiny political elite that is expanding by the day, then it becomes a real problem. You know, I was making a joke recently on Twitter. You know, one of the youth leaders of the party said that his lieutenant should be patient, that contracts, appointments, and the travel opportunities and employment are on the way. I say, hey God, problem. Everybody wants to do wealth without enterprise. You know, governance has to be about service, because it has to cost you something for you to say you want to serve in public office. But it's the other way around. You know, you have become like a huge, huge burden on public treasury. So that's, for me, something that has to change. Governance has to be accountable. It means institutions, policies, laws, frameworks that can make sure that if we say we want to spend 10 naira, we're spending the right amount. I was speaking to a VC, and he was talking about how they were supposed to deliver an equipment in his school, and it was a equipment that was supposed to be used to dry, to make gari, like an industrial gari. And so, man, when the guy brought the equipment, he figured out that it was steel that they, and now said steel cannot work for gari, because by the time it starts getting rust, then the gari starts getting, you know, you can't even drink the gari or make the gari. And at the end of the day, what you figure out is that they gave the guy the contract that was meant for 100 million naira. Somebody in Abuja already pocketed 40 million naira. You know, the guy who took the contract, who would do the job finally, is not even the one that collected the money. He's just one nameless guy who just knows how to submit documents well in Abuja. And after he has done it, he pocketed 20 million naira.
That's 60 gone.
Then he will look for somebody, a local man, and say, yeah, go and do Gari engine. And somehow, maybe even for the guy to even install the Gari engine, he has to even sell to another people with another 10 million. That's the situation of Nigeria. And that's why public contracting is just, there is no sense of evaluation or adjustment to it. So for me, public use of public, because it comes back to us, respond on PFM, has to be planked on optimization and efficiency. If that's not happening, we are just all joking. You know, and all the ideas that I'm talking about, long-term thinking, all those ones is just game. You know, they're all games. They are talking about something that you can even do in the medium. The other part is also what he said about human capital investment. We can talk about all of this, but education, critical for me. And why is critical? Not maybe, you know, human capital as health, education, social protection. But for me, I take education extra, you know, because look at the Minister of Education in the last 8 years, you know, it's just the same woman with the same name that was repeated twice. Adamu Adamu.
Yes.
And you know, nice columnist. They said, I mean, I never read his columns on Daily Trust, but they said it was a nice columnist, had all the best ideas about education. But see, what has changed? What has improved? What is his legacy? You know, in some sort of way. Those are the things that you bring to the table. You know, and look at how the current state of education is declining. It has to be arrested. It has to be changed. So how it take us, you know, doing something transformative, especially for primary and tertiary education levels. And let state governments also figure out how they optimize the secondary level. If we don't fix the primary level education, we know that most of the time our chances are lost already. Yeah.
All right, thank you so much. Education, accountable governance, power, long-term planning, subsidy, public finance management, admission of justice, you know, consequences, as you said, and investment in human capital, right? Those are key issues, and they are really important. But I just want to ask one more question rather, and then just give me your recommendation and then we call it a day. Where does citizen fit in all of this? The normal Nigerian person, an active citizen, the average Nigerian, where do they come in? Is there a part for them to play in all of this, or it's just, you know, government. So, Ini, let me hear you.
We have a very critical role to play.
A very, very critical role to play. I think that every citizen should see themselves as an accountability merchant. Right? There's usually this disconnect, you know, for a lot of citizens, right? Between how they view government and the role government should play in their lives. If you go to like the rural communities, any project that comes to a community, the community sees it as a blessing, maybe from whoever maybe nominated that project, whether it's the government, maybe a commissioner, whoever must have attracted that project or influenced the project in the first place, as something to be grateful for. And the reason why they would see it as that is because they do not think government exists
to serve them.
Hmm. So the moment you are able to change that psyche,
that's true.
See them as people who you employ, right? Who are supposed to represent your interests or to further your interests. You become more interested in what they do that affects your life. In a country like Nigeria, where, I mean, we're in a low trust environment, governments do not necessarily have the capacity to monitor what they even do, right? You have projects littered across the length and breadth of, if it's a state, if it's a community, as the case may be, and they are beneficiaries of these projects, and they are supposed to give feedback, they are supposed to hold, you know, governments at whatever level accountable for those projects that have been carried out on their behalf, but they either do not have the information to do this, or even when the information is available, they do not have the will power to actually do this. And from the kind of work budget does, we've seen that, I mean, over time, there are results from citizens becoming active or taking the role of an active citizen. There are instances where, I mean, with our tracking officers, in collaboration with community members, have identified projects that were either abandoned, health centers, for instance, that were supposed to serve those communities. Because in some states, some communities are very far from, you know, the centers where they are functional, maybe secondary hospitals. And so when there are ailments, the nearest facility to access is the primary health care center. And so when it's not functioning, a lot of people have died from, you know, treatable ailments, from things as basic as malaria.
Yeah.
That could have, you know, that a healthcare center could have addressed.
Yeah, that's true.
Disease outbreaks, they start from communities. If you don't have health workers in those communities that are able to catch them early, maybe quarantine or provide first aid or that immediate health support, that's when they now become the spread and they become a national problem, as the case may be. So when citizens or other accountability actors like civil society, like budget gets involved, contractors have gone back to sites, equipment have been provided to those facilities, and the citizens now begin to enjoy the benefits of having those facilities in their communities. Without having the communities themselves or the citizens themselves involved, those were projects that probably the funds that had been appropriated for those projects would have gone into private pockets. So that tells you, or gives you a very, very critical example of the usefulness of having citizens become interested first and involved in governance.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, whatever policies government creates or puts in place, it's
for their interest.
It's for the interest of the general populace, as the case may be.
Yes, that's true. Thank you so much. Share your 2 cents and citizens' role in this.
2 cents, so 2 kobo.
Kobo.
All right, cool. I would just say citizens must hold government accountable. I mean, that's the easiest we can do. I know this is one of the things we might be talking here, might be, you know, plenty too rangy, you know, big English. But those are the fundamental planks that can really trigger society. But the major thing is that people in public office must have a sense of stewardship. And the only way they have a sense of stewardship is by accountability. Democracy is not a monarchy. Democracy is not autocracy. Democracy is not Yoruba people say Oyedile. It's not hereditary. So it's not, and that's how it's not. It's not tradition. It's a call to service, to serve the people. You must carry that sense of stewardship. I mean, the people must ensure that they continue to seize the space, so that people in public office could understand. I don't like calling them people in power, but I think power still belongs to the people.
Yeah,
but people in public office, they must understand that you always get it, that you are working for the people. The people must only show them you are working for us. So that's what it is. And it's about asking them all those questions. I mean, budget, we call ourselves ask questions. I mean, the money I gave you, are you doing all of that? The authority, the civil service, every resource we have access to manage. What exactly are you doing with that? And that's supposed to trigger, you know, continuous questioning until we get the kind of desired state that we want. So get informed, look for every opportunity to get the means, and let's put the people that we have elected, I mean, let's put them to task. I mean, we were sitting in our house now, and they came to beg us that they want to serve for us. And there's a kind of privilege that they will, their car will be going out, 20 cars. They will have starring, they will have ambulance, they will have chef, they will give in. They don't tell me, do they take light in government house? maybe the one in Abia State that is on rent. You know? But to be honest with you, you ask for that privilege, you then definitely you should perform and do the work. Thanks.
All right, thank you, thank you. It's been an interesting conversation. You've said a lot, and I believe that listeners out there are keen on taking some of these things. So thank you so much, Olusegun Iminde. He's been with us. He's the Global Director of Budget, and Inyobong Usen is the Head of Research and Policy Advisory Unit at Budget Foundation. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Nancy.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Yeah.
Moving focused on the economy, what's next for Nigeria, and we'll be bringing more of this conversation. We know we're going to touch on governance, we're going to touch on health, but the key thing here is, I mean, a lot has been said, but we'd also want to hear from you. We'd also hear your two cents, according to Shoun, your two kobo on all of this. Yes, so you can be a part of the conversation with the hashtag What's Next Nigeria, and you can follow us on social media at BudgetNG across Facebook, Instagram, and of course on Twitter. My name is Nancy Odimegu. The What's Next series is going to continue in the next episode. Have a good one.